Today, renters thrown under the bus by design. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and property news. As the election approaches, I want to underline again the dramatic issues that renters are facing across the country. I'll be publishing my latest household surveys for April tomorrow, but Anglicare Australia released their Rental Affordability Snapshot Report for 2025 based on a survey of over 51,000 rental listings across the country using data from realestate.com.au. They've measured affordability in Australia's rental market for 16 years, and they say they've witnessed the struggling face of Australians on the lowest incomes. Nationally, the situation has remained dire for most household types compared to 2024. They point out that the private rental market is simply impossible for Australians on low incomes, but this is not by accident. For years, they say, the dominant narrative surrounding housing has been that the crisis is driven by limited supply. Governments and the property industry continue to feed the narrative that we have a shortage of homes and that more supply will solve the crisis through a trickle-down effect that will eventually benefit low-income households. The results in this year's snapshot do not support this conclusion, they said. This year, rental listings across the country rose to just over 51,000. That's up from 45,000 at the same time last year. But despite an increase in rental listings of over 13%, affordability stagnated or declined across almost every household type. If a simple increase in the supply of housing really added more affordable housing, then we should have expected to see an increase in affordability. So, while supply is important, it's not the silver bullet for the housing crisis. Australia's private rental system is not designed to provide affordable homes to renters, especially those on low incomes. In fact, adding more supply will have only a limited impact if the homes supplied aren't affordable for the people who need them. Without reforming tax settings that favour landlords or ensuring more public and community homes are built, renters will see no improvement to the market conditions. Supply alone cannot push down prices when the market is designed to keep rents high and to maximise investor profit. And they put their finger on a critical point. Many would say that because the housing market has become too expensive, it's broken. However, the truth simply is that the housing market is working exactly as it was designed to. Generous tax handouts for investors have incentivized the buying and selling of homes like stocks, turning a fundamental human right into a speculative commodity trade. This has happened entirely by choice. Choices made by governments over the past 40 years have entrenched inequality in Australia's private rental market. Government divestment from providing housing has led to dwindling social housing supply as Australia's population has grown, and the prioritisation of private subsidies as a solution has done little to relieve the burden on Australians struggling to make ends meet. It doesn't have to be this way. Just as the dire state of the rental market exists by choice, we can choose a different way. Australia can choose to undo policy settings that have crushed the poorest and most vulnerable in the community. Turning to the survey results, their analysis using the mythical 30% of income to pay for housing, I might add, assesses each property from their survey for affordability and suitability metrics for 13 different household types on low incomes. In passing, I will note their comment that for most people on low incomes, the cost of rents needs to be no more than 30% of a household budget for it not to cause financial stress. This is an internationally accepted benchmark based on many years of study into the impacts of cost of living and how they impact people. So Anglicare uses the 30% benchmark, but I would note that we see many paying half of their income or even more for housing, which is just how broken things are. They have 13 categories of households: single people receiving the disability pension, youth allowance, job seeker, and the age pension or earning minimum wages. Single parents receiving the parental payment, earning the minimum wage, or a combination of those income sources. Couples without children on the age pension, and couples with children on job seeker, parenting payment, earning the minimum wage, or a combination of those income sources. And to test whether a listing would be affordable, they calculate the maximum weekly affordable rent for each household type. That's done using government published information on rates of payment for job seeker, youth allowance, disability support pension, the age pension, parenting payment, minimum wage rates, applicable family tax benefits, additional supplements and allowances, and the maximum rate of Commonwealth rent assistance. And then they compare those figures against properties deemed suitable. Suitable means a listing contains an appropriate number of bedrooms for the number of people or family within a household type. For example, a one-bedroom apartment would not be appropriate for a family with two children, nor would a room in a share house be appropriate for a couple on the age pension. And they acknowledge that one area where they're likely to overestimate the suitability of a property is for people on the disability support pension. While not every person with a disability would need modified housing, there are many that do. And their snapshot does not measure accessibility or compliance with universal housing standards. Anyway, across the country, there were 74 electorates without a single affordable rental for someone on the minimum wage. For a person out of work, it's even grimmer. Out of 51,000 listings across the country, just 3 were affordable for someone on JobSeeker. Despite an increase in the number of listings surveyed in the year compared to 2024, Australians on low incomes or relying on income support payments will be hard-pressed to find any good news at all. With the national vacancy rate sitting at around 1.3%, up from last year, of course, observers may be forgiven for assuming that this increase in listings will provide relief for Australians desperately trying to keep a roof over their heads. But for single people on JobSeeker or youth allowance, affordability remains almost non-existent, with just 3 listings across the entire country affordable for someone on JobSeeker and none for those on youth allowance. Even households with comparatively higher incomes, such as a minimum wage earner or people on the age pension, they saw minimal improvements. For instance, single minimum wage earners saw only a 0.1 percentage point increase in affordable properties from 0.6% to 0.7%. The data confirms that affordability at the bottom end of the market is stagnant, with marginal gains overshadowed by a growing housing crisis. Breaking the data down reveals stark disparities in affordability. It's clear that even in relatively better performing regions, access remains limited for households on low incomes. In every state and territory, affordability for those groups is close to zero, reinforcing the systemic exclusion of people on low incomes from the private rental market. Perhaps most concerning is that the overall increase in rental listings from 45,115 in 2024 to 51,238 in 2025 did not translate into improved affordability. So this calls into question the assumption that increasing supply alone will ease rental stress for low-income households. The data shows that even with more properties on the market, affordability rates remains static or declined for most groups. The persistent lack of affordable options highlights the urgent need for systemic interventions, they say. Australia's housing crisis has been building for decades, with policy settings exacerbating and incentivizing the degradation of affordability. Australia's spending on housing has slowly divested a direct role for government to play in the provision of housing, instead prioritizing private subsidy schemes for renters and investors alike, with neither producing any long-term or notable benefit. Tax concessions like negative gearing and the capital gains tax discounts do little to incentivize affordable housing, instead providing more opportunity for wealth generation for investors. The housing system is not designed to provide housing. It is designed to provide profit. Negative gearing was initially intended as an incentive to landlords to offer below market rents to tenants by allowing them to claim the loss as a deduction on their income tax. However, the dual impact of the capital gains tax discount has perversely incentivized already wealthy investors to leverage existing assets, to outbid potential first-home buyers, and to reduce their tax burden while waiting to sell the property for its capital gains. This is not a system designed to make housing affordable. It's designed to make housing profitable. The private market has consistently demonstrated that it cannot be relied on to provide real solutions or to self-regulate. There is a vested interest from investors to protect the current tax settings and to defend them by arguing that the trickle-down effect makes housing more affordable over time. There is in fact no evidence supporting this claim, while in fact more evidence suggests that the opposite is true. Between 1996 and 2011, the shortfall of affordable rentals grew for low-income households. That's according to analysis from the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. Landlords and investors often use the threat that they will be forced to sell their property, thus reducing rental stock if changes are made to their lucrative tax benefits. The threat of churn in the market puts off reform to the tax settings, but the reality is that renters in the private market already live in the churn of rentals entering and exiting the market. Already, 50% of properties exit the private rental market after only 5 years. The rental market continues to adapt, as data shows that in Melbourne and Sydney, around one-third of new rental tenancies commenced in properties that were new to the rental market, while around one quarter of bond refunds were for properties that had left the private rental sector. Anglicare Australia's own research has revealed the lopsided impacts of the tax concessions. A Costly Choice report found that 55% of negative gearing concessions benefited the top quintile of income earners, while only 2% went to the lowest income earners. Additionally, a staggering 82% of benefits from the capital gains tax discount went to the top income quintile. The impact of these tax concessions is ultimately further entrenching the wealth divide. These generous tax settings are expensive. Analysis from the Parliamentary Budget Office shows that negative gearing deductions and the capital gains tax discounts cost the budget around $11 billion in foregone revenue in the year 23-24, and they also estimate that over the next decade those costs will double, costing $21.4 billion to the budget bottom line by 2033-34. An overhaul of Australia's tax regime is indeed needed. Anglicare Australia proposes firstly that the capital gains tax discount is slowly phased out over a period of, say, 10 years. This gradual approach to reform gives the housing market time to adjust and would guard against short-term shocks. Secondly, negative gearing deductions would be phased out for new investors in the private market. By eliminating these elements of Australia's tax regime, the government can remove the incentives that are making housing unaffordable. In so doing, the government can generate revenue that's otherwise foregone and direct that into measures that would make renting affordable. Secure housing, they say, is the basis of building a secure life. Yet for people relying on income support payments to make ends meet, they will never experience housing security. Where the social security system was meant to help people avoid falling into poverty, it instead works to trap them there. The reality facing out-of-work Australians is that job seeker payments will never be enough to help them afford the basics. The weekly rate of payments sits nowhere near the Henderson poverty line. In fact, JobSeeker is so stubbornly below the poverty line that the temporary doubling of the payment during the pandemic only barely lifted people out of poverty. The low rates of working age payments ultimately force those relying on the payments to make difficult choices between paying for food, medicine, or heating just to ensure that they still have a home. These choices are exacerbated by the fact that rental price growth has far outstripped the payment rate. In fact, a person on JobSeeker could spend all of their income and still not afford the average asking rent, even with the help of the Commonwealth Rent Assistance, the CRA. Commonwealth Rent Assistance has become the federal government's single largest recurring household expense. Each year, the cost of the program reaches new heights, having climbed to a total cost of $5.5 billion in the year 23-24. Despite this, there is little evidence that CRA is helping Australians cover the costs of renting. Only one in three people on JobSeeker and one in 10 young people out of work are even eligible for the payment. After receiving the payment, half of all people receiving the payment remain in rental stress. Over the course of two budgets between 2022 and 2024, the federal government increased the basic rate of CRA by a collective 25%. While these increases were welcome, these increases made no difference in affordability for a single person on JobSeeker. Increasing the payment is simply not effective. Further, the payment is plagued with targeting accuracy problems. Research from the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute estimates that payments has a target error rate of 41%, with the payment not reaching low-income renters who would benefit the most from support. Anglicare Australia believes that Commonwealth rent assistance needs to be overhauled in order to become effective. By reforming the cut-in rate of the payment and indexing the payment to average rents by region, the CRA can reach more people and be more effective in responding to the housing costs. The housing crisis has been one of the biggest talking points in public discourse over several years now. The solution favoured by the property industry and by governments is to increase private supply on the assumption that affordable homes will trickle down as a result. The idea that private supply alone will improve affordability is not borne out by the evidence, nor by the results of the snapshot. Australia currently completes 180,000 new dwellings each year. Despite new supply outstripping population growth, affordability has declined. Increasing supply is part of the solution, but only if the right supply is built. Australian government once took a more active role in providing affordable homes. The Commonwealth State Housing Agreement was first established so the federal government could play a direct role in the provision of affordable housing. In the first year of the agreement, nearly one in every four homes in Australia was built by the government. The slow and gradual divestment of responsibility by the federal government, effectively outsourcing the provision of housing to the private market, has led to the gradual decline of public housing as a percentage of overall stock. In 2021, public and social housing made up only 3.8% of total stock in Australia. That's down from 4.9% in 1981. As a result, the shortfall in public and community housing has grown to at least 640,000 homes. It's this shortfall, rather than a need for generic homes, that has driven the crisis. To simply maintain the current ratio of social housing, we would need to add 15,000 new social homes every year. At current rates of construction, we are only managing to add around 3,000 new homes to the supply. And even the Housing Australia Future Fund's goal to support the construction of 30,000 new social homes in the first 5 years won't be enough to meet the social housing need. So the government cannot rely on off-budget measures to provide enough investment that meets the scale of the crisis. It must make sustained capital investments in new social housing. And Care Australia believes that the government must support the construction of 25,000 new public and social homes every year for the next two decades. That will allow Australia to close the shortfall and meet the demand. And so they conclude that for 16 years, Anglicare Australia has borne witness to the erosion of affordability in Australia's private rental market. Each year, we hope for the best. We endeavour to publish a snapshot that shows improvement instead of feeding our worst fears. Unfortunately, getting harder to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Australia's housing crisis is not a temporary shock or a blip in the system. Australia's housing crisis is the system itself. The reality is that the housing market is designed to generate profit and wealth for investors, not to provide homes to those in need. While the richest continue to amass new wealth, the poorest find themselves even more stretched, forced to make difficult choices between staying warm over winter or putting food on the table just to keep a roof over their heads. This reality is a choice. As long as governments choose not to play a role in providing affordable homes, then nothing will change. The solutions are clear, and they involve putting real people at the centre of housing. They will require a concerted and dedicated effort to reform unjust tax handouts and build the homes we need, but they are not impossible. The housing crisis is a result of policy decisions made by governments. There are decisions that can and must be reversed so that every Australian can find a home of their own. However, against that yardstick, none of the political parties have stepped up, despite the vague promises made through the election campaigns. The 35% of people in the rental sector and rising have little hope despite there being a roadmap which could solve the problem of rental affordability. As Anna Claire says, this is by design and, to my mind, not acceptable in a civilised modern Australia. But without bold choices, inequality will only entrench further. It's time Australia chose a future where every Australian can find a place to call home. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.